we are. I am so excited to start our Aging Well Together show. Today's show is all about understanding and celebrating and honoring occupational therapists as it's April and April is Occupational Therapist Month. As I said last show, we were celebrating Social Workers Month in March, and I feel like the title missing a word. I don't think it should be OT Month. I think it should be OT Celebration Month or OT Awareness Month, but it's Occupational Therapist Month, and I'm so excited to have my two favorite, I think, my two favorite occupational therapists on the show. We have Marie Dagger back on the show. We're going to be celebrating her a little bit because it is her fifth time. She is back on from the Orange County Department on Aging. The occupational therapist is part of the Aging Transitions team. She has been highlighted on other shows. You can go onto the website and see it. And her colleagues were on last week for Social Worker Month. And then my longtime colleague and friend, Elizabeth Hart, who is one of the OTs. I think there are multiple. Okay, one of the occupational therapists with at my old stomping ground, Carol Woods Retirement Community. So I am thrilled to have wonderful. I think my other favorite OT is Tipa Snow. So I think the three of you create, yeah, they're nodding, the trifecta of phenomenal OTs that we have in our community, and frankly, national leaders and international leaders that we just happen to have here in Orange County. I am so excited for all we will learn together. But before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3, either on 103.5 FM if you're driving around our area or listening at home and you are in the radius of signal strength, or you can stream us live every Thursday through the WCOMFM.org website. And that's how I often listen to it. So you can stream us. But you can also go online, and I'll talk about that in a moment because the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful and amazing team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and expert guests on our show, like today with Marie and last week and so many of our shows, the team also there, thank you, Marilyn Hole, also posts each of our previous shows on the Orange County Department on Aging's website, where our show becomes a podcast. I could say recording, but people say, is it a podcast? I say, oh, it's a radio show, but then it becomes a podcast, and you can catch all of them. If you go to the website, you can also find such a great range of local Orange County aging resources at the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, and this is where I will slow down so people can get out their piece of paper and a pencil or a pen. It is www.orangecountync.gov/aging, orangecountync.gov/aging. People, our loyal listeners know I always make a big deal about the NC in that website, or else you will go to Orange County, California, as I know some of my colleagues have done. So yes, I'm seeing nodding there. So if you want to be old school and pick up the phone or send an email, if you have any questions about local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. Usually that is what I'm looking at Marie because she's like, that's the main number, Marie, and make sure to give a shout out to the Aging Helpline, but I do give folks the main number. And then if you have any questions about our show or you want to suggest a topic or person or organization, please feel free to email me at my email address, which is one long smushy word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. All right, I have no idea since we are recording this prior because the excitement, as many of our loyal listeners know, we are moving to our new studio at the Drakeford Library in Carrboro. So we had to pre-record this show. So I'm hoping you heard just a little bit of music in the beginning and you'll hear a lot more music at the end. Website folks, I'm not sure if the music will come through. But a shout out to the Carrboro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. And so you can hear that live or on any of our other 74 shows, you can listen to them. My fabulous co-host, Alicia Reed, is we're doing this at a different time. She wasn't able to join us by Zoom, but we miss her. Alicia is one of the dedicated community volunteers in Orange County. She's also one of the wonderful wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging. If you are listening to us live, she comes on after with Afternoon Talk with Alicia. So she's all kind of wonderful. And that woman, we broke down the studio, the WCOM studio in Carrboro on Saturday, and she was just amazing. She came with tools. She came with cocktails. She came with rags and cleaning. Like, she was just the Energizer Bunny. I came with cheer and pizza, but she just has done so much for the studio, and I'm so excited about the new studio. All right, I've talked enough. For those of you who don't know, I am Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports, particularly in our community, Orange County. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and I always like to say at 54, I am focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, enough. Let us turn to our special guest this month for Occupational Therapy Month. And listeners, I am going to say OT a lot. We've said it now, but that's what OT stands for. But first, and I warned Marie something was going to happen, we do have a bit of a celebration. Yes, it is OT month, and we are celebrating OT. So, Elizabeth, there's going to be a lot of love coming your way too in a second. Marie Dagger, as I said, is the occupational therapist with the Orange County Department on Aging. Elizabeth Hart is here from Carol Woods. They'll tell you all about themselves and their backgrounds a little bit. But we are taking a special moment to celebrate Marie. This is her fifth time on the Aging Well Together show. Yay! We're looking at each other. It is the first time we have had a guest host, a guest expert, a guest sharer on five times, and we're making a big deal about it. And I'm super sad we're not in person. So, for those of you who watch Saturday Night Live, I watch Saturday Night Live and I love it. And if for those who do, every time there's a fifth time host, they join the exclusive five timers club. And that's a very elite club. Marie Dagger won. There was a little bit of a competition about who at the Orange County Department on Aging. Kendall is coming right up and then Latanya. So, they're going to be joining you soon in this elite group. And at Saturday Night Live, they get a jacket for. And so I was like, well, we can't do that. We have to do something different. And listeners, you're not going to be able to see this. Oh, I'll take another picture of us. So for our five timers, because we are in Orange County, you're getting a very cool orange scarf that will look like this. Because I was going to do a feather boa, but I thought, well, you might not be able to wear as much. But so the all five timers are going to get a cool Orange County scarf to wear to celebrate their love of Orange County and to celebrate you sharing your expertise for five times. Congratulations, Marie Dagger.
Thank you, Heather. That's beautiful. I'm so glad that I've been able to be with you so many times.
I know. I will
And
bring.
did you say this is the 75th show, too?
This is also our 75th show, three quarters of a century show. So anyway, I will be bringing this to you, and it's actually very comfortable. I researched how much kind of giggliness with a boa or actually something practical, and because OTs are both creative and practical, so that's coming to you. All right, enough about this. Welcome. I am going to, let's see. Marie, do you want to do it first because you've gone through this process to show Elizabeth before we jump
Sure,
in? I like to
sure.
dive into each of you. What brought you into occupational therapy and then specifically focusing on older adults? We love learning about motivations here.
Yeah, and I mean, I think motivation is the name of the game in most of what we do, actually. It's, finding the reason behind people do what they do. So I think starting with motivation is apt. And so I've got to think back a good little while now. I was just thinking this morning, Elizabeth. She and I graduated together from UNC back in, it was 2014.
So
So it's been
charming.
almost 11 years ago that we've been on this OT journey.
We are three UNC Tar Heels, by the way, on this call. So we didn't have that last show. So I'd like to do a shout out for that. Okay, go on.
Yeah, so thinking back to when I was probably back in high school trying to figure out what did I want to be, where did I want to go to college, trying to get all my ducks in a row, and I threw so many different things around thinking back to those days. I didn't know what I wanted, but my mom is a nurse, she's an RN, and she, moms know their kids. She just looked at me and she said, "I think you need to be an OT." Like, what is this? I don't even like I've never heard this word before. And so, I did some observations, some shadowing hours, and I'm like, well, this is interesting. But that was also right about the time when they were switching from bachelor's level to master's level. So, I had this whole extra journey to get sorted out. But I knew, I was one of the lucky ones that very early, I was 18 years old and I figured out that I wanted to be an OT. And I don't think that's the normal trajectory necessarily. Elizabeth is shaking her head very
Shaking
strongly
your
right
head. Yeah,
now.
we're a radio show, not a TV show. So we will talk about the expressions people are giving. And Elizabeth is laughing and shaking her head. Go on.
Yeah, because even thinking back to our OT class, I think there were only a handful of us that literally went straight through, straight through from undergrad to grad school to get this degree. But yeah, so I, figured out at a young age that I wanted to be an OT, and I always knew I wanted to work with older adults too. Again, I don't think that's the normal path, the normal trajectory, but I guess I've just always felt a little bit more of a connection to older adults. I've always felt a little bit more rapport there. And it's what clicked. It's what made sense to me. And then, as the years went on, my grandparents lived locally here. And, getting that firsthand view of some of the struggles they had trying to age well in the community with diagnoses on top of the, like so many health concerns on top of that. And that really, changed my trajectory, not just OT, not just older adults, but like aging well with like cognitive concerns in the community. It really, kind of took that path forward for me.
It's amazing, and I've had that too, when our professional skills all of a sudden get very personal very quickly and how
Very quickly.
we teach them. Well, thank you. And every time, even though fifth time plus we've been college forever, I'm always learning something new about you. Elizabeth, what brought you into this field? And where are
I
you
was
from and all that?
laughing and shaking my head because my OT journey is like the opposite of Marie's. I came OT is my fourth career. I had a very I did not know what I wanted to be when I grew up when I was younger, and I
Still
didn't.
don't. I'm 54 and I'm still figuring it out. Okay, go
Exactly.
on.
Like I had no clue. I just tried a lot of different things on for size, and I learned a lot of things along the way. My mother was also a nurse. She was actually a hospice nurse, and I have always enjoyed the company of older adults since I was a little kid. I used to carry my pet rabbit around the neighborhood and knock on the doors of older people in my neighborhood because I didn't have grandparents. I didn't grow up with my grandparents. I would knock on the doors and say, "Hello, my name is Elizabeth. This is my rabbit Josephine. Would you like to be my grandparents?" And that's how I
Oh,
connected to the older adults just in my neighborhood. But I've just always been, I don't know what it is. They've just always been, they've always been my people since I was very young. My mother was a nurse. She was a hospice nurse. And in high school and in college, I actually became a hospice volunteer. And I was lucky enough to get a grant from my college. I went to Wellesley College, and they gave me a grant to spend a whole summer working in an inpatient hospice in Shreveport, Louisiana. And it was, to this day, the best job I've ever had. And I just loved it. My whole job was connecting with older adults, figuring out what mattered to them, and, maximizing their quality of life for the time they had left. And it was the best job. And I remember thinking at the time,
It's too bad there's not room for there's not room in healthcare for someone like me, because I knew I didn't want to be a nurse. I knew I didn't want to be a doctor. I just didn't know about OT. So I did a lot of other things. I worked in publishing. I went to culinary school. I had my own personal chefing and catering business. And I
What?
was kind of in the midst of this quarter life crisis where I knew I didn't want to keep cooking fussy food for rich people. I wanted to be in a helping profession, and I didn't know what to do. So I was commiserating with one of my good friends who's a speech therapist. And I said, well, maybe I should just go back to school and become a physical therapist. And she goes, oh no, you'd be a much better OT. And I just filed that away as like, okay. And then I said the same thing to my mother. I'm in the midst of my quarter life crisis. I said, maybe I should just go back to school and become a PT. She's like, no, you'd be a much better OT. And I said, what the heck, guys? You've seen me flailing in my 20s trying to figure out where to go. Why haven't you brought this up before? So when I looked into it, like all the lights went off. I'm like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. This is, it had everything. And I think the problem I had with the medical profession, the reason I didn't pursue it straight out of undergrad, is because what I saw, was a system that treated people like pathologies instead of like human beings. And what drew me to OT was that it looked at people holistically. As Jenny Stoffel said, it's concerned about what matters to you, not what's the matter with you. And once I found it, then I'm like, this is exactly what I should be doing. So I got lucky enough to get into UNC's OT program. We moved here from Boston, and Marie and I were classmates, and I had a one-track mind in school. I knew I was going to be working with older adults, and I seized every opportunity I could to maximize my experience with older adults. And I've been working with older adults ever since.
Oh my gosh. Elizabeth, you and I have been professional colleagues. We need to go out for drinks or something fun.
Anytime.
We overlap in interesting ways. So one of the things that so much of that is interesting. I want to go back to the fact, first of all, so you went to Wellesley, and I was not too far away at Brandeis, so we're both Bostonian, trained people. But the fact that you were in Wellesley and got a hospice internship in Shreveport, Louisiana, I kind of feel like that. I'm curious that through, if you don't mind, that through line, how that happened, because that brought you into kind of more southern experiences that you, yeah.
So there's a term apparently for people like me. So my mother was in the Air Force. I grew up primarily in Texas and Louisiana. I went to high school in Louisiana, but I wanted to get as far away from Louisiana for college, which is one reason why I ended up at Wellesley. And so, but I would come home in the summer. So I got a job, my mother is in Shreveport at the time. So I got a job at the inpatient hospice there. So they call me a halfback because I grew up in the South. I moved up north for a long period of time. We stayed in Boston for about 12 years. And then I moved here for graduate school. So we came halfway back.
Yes. Well, I've heard that term before with the, going back to North Carolina, I suppose, because we went right into your college world, I didn't realize you were from kind of Texas and Louisiana. So that, thank you. That makes
Yes.
sense. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, there's so much more we need to talk about. And also, I love the term quarter life century, was the
Crisis.
quarter life crisis, because I was the same age, and I always call it my early midlife crisis, but the quarter life crisis is brilliant. And I had the same situation of I want to be in healthcare, but I don't want to be a doctor or nurse, or for me, it would be too much work because I didn't take enough courses. But my path led me to public health, where your path led you to OT, and then we all came down to UNC, or came up to. Okay, love so much of that. I want to build off something you said, which is a great segue into how do you define occupational therapy? And I love what you just said about what matters to you versus
What's the
what's the
matter
matter?
with
What's
you?
the matter? Yeah. I've never heard that before. That's amazing. Marie, do you want to start with the kind of definition of OT a little bit? And then Elizabeth, you can add flair to that.
Say, I vividly remember so many conversations about like, what's your elevator speech? How do you describe OT in 15, 30 seconds? Because it's not necessarily easy to describe, but it's this idea of, occupational therapists help support people in, whether it's learning or relearning, skills and ways of modifying things to do the things that are important and necessary and meaningful in day-to-day life. And so that can come from several different angles. I tend to think I do, and we'll dive into each of our individual works in a little bit, but I work a lot in the like environmental realm of things. So what can we tweak in the environment, in your the physical space you exist in, or the social space you exist in, or even the technology space you exist in, to make things more possible than they used to be. But I mean, you can also tweak things with the the way in which the occupation itself, the activity you're doing, how can you tweak that activity to make things more possible? Or the person themselves, what changes can we make as a person to make things more possible? So coming from these like many different angles, and what little tweaks, what little shifts can you take to make it work? And it's all, it's a give and a take, it's a collaboration. Between, the therapist who, has this brainstorming mind and the person themselves who's the expert in their life and their needs. And you put your heads together and you come up with ideas and you see what works, you figure out what doesn't work, and you move on from there and keep trying.
I love that definition, and that I love the approach. Elizabeth, anything you want to add to how your elevator speech, though I do love that what matters, but all these key words you just said, meaningful, matters, purpose, possible.
Yeah, I mean everyone struggles with the elevator speech. The line I get is, why do I need an occupational therapist? I'm retired.
I don't need a job.
I
Oh,
don't need a
that's right.
job. Yeah, we get a lot of that. But so first it's really about defining occupations. It's like all of the things, all of us in our life, we have roles that are important to us. We have activities that we have to get done. We have activities that we enjoy doing. It's the accumulation of all of those things that give our life meaning. And as we move through our lifespan, things happen. Our bodies change. We have different brains that, don't always cooperate with us. There are a whole host of things that can break down that can make any of those roles or any of those activities more challenging. And OTs, like, we're really professional problem solvers. My first job is to find out, is to learn more about you, who you are, what matters to you, what gives your life meaning, and to understand, like, what's getting in the way right now, what's getting in the way of you being able to do those things or to fulfill those roles. And then it's a collaboration working together. I bring my OT problem solving brain, and they bring their expertise in their lives, and we collaborate to come up with ideas and modifications so that they can continue doing the things that are important to them.
I love that you brought up the term, I love it, professional problem solvers. As I was preparing for today, and I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about that you both that I've seen in action, and Tipa and others, I was trying to define it for myself, and I used the term that OTs are part detective, part engineer, part magician, and then you have your tips and tricks. But I love this conversation about being a problem solver. And we actually talked about it on last week's show because the social work team talked about their role as problem solvers. And I have this daughter who's in engineering school, and they said engineers are problem solvers. And it's so interesting to see how different professionals are problem solvers, but use their own lens or their own toolbox. Whereas the social work problem solving is probably in the sort of psychosocial emotional response realm, the engineers are building things and thinking through. You just are looking at all kinds of things in around their person and their environment. Anyway, I love everything about that.
But knowing too, there's so many collaborations between these professions. I mean, I could not do what I do without my social work team. And I see Elizabeth nodding her head there too. I mean, OT and social work, we are buddy. Yeah, we're both doing the finger. We're buddies. We got our fingers on everything twisted up together because we have, it's especially in like the community setting, I feel like OT and social work are much stronger partners than the traditional allied health OT PT speech. I mean, they have there is that connection, there is that role, there is that place. But especially in the community, social work and OT, yeah, we do so many things together. But even on the engineering side of things, I've actually been collaborating with faculty out of NC State probably for about 5 years now. They've had this like revolving student project working on a an electric assist transport wheelchair. And trying to make this so it's like a transport wheelchair. The battery's super light, gives somebody a little boost when they're trying to push their loved one up a ramp or over a threshold. Such a cool idea. And so, they come to me to ask questions about like the what kind of grip, what kind of button, how can we make this user interface work? And they figure out all the mechanics behind it and all electrical stuff. So we all like, yes, we come from different lenses, but we're all trying to, deal with some of the same challenges and problems for folks and make things just that smidge bit easier.
I know, and I love that example also of our partners working together, the disciplines, but also our academic institutions, which is a segue to something I want to say in a moment. But I love that you're working with the NC State design team, and I've heard a that are different universities, and that's why we're so blessed to have all these different academic partners. Clearly, we're sort of embedded here in Chapel Hill, and so UNC, and we went there. But our partners, I will say at Duke, but at NC State, and all these, and that's what they everyone's trying to address different aspects and how can people combine their expertise. There is something, and I would like to compliment UNC, and I don't mean to throw shade at other universities. But I first learned about occupational therapy in 2003 when I first came to Carol Woods and went to a conference and learned about it. But learned that the program at UNC and the way that you all are trained is a more expansive, a broader philosophical and programmatic training than at other places. Because some, and they're both nodding their heads, because what I learned, some occupational therapists think only in terms of activities of daily living. They're like, oh, they're the people that come in and look at your bathrooms and your handrails and your toilet seats. And yes, that's what you do. But that they were strictly ADL focused, activity focused, as opposed to you all being steeped in meaning and purpose. So I don't mean to disrespect others, but I know that you all have been trained in like the best place.
I would agree with you, Heather. I'm admittedly biased, but I will say that as students, like this was sometimes a source of frustration for us because we were so steeped in theory and all of us were like, oh my gosh, we don't know what to actually do. What should we do? And
That's interesting.
everyone told us along the way, like along the way,
You'll
trust the
figure it
process,
out.
we'll figure it out. Like it's, it's the theory, that's the stuff that's harder to teach. The clinical skills, they change all the time. You're going to learn that on the job, but what UNC tried to do or does very successfully is really teaching you how to think and how do you approach these difficult messy situations. And I didn't believe it when I was in school. There were times where we were like at the art museum, and I'm like, what are we doing? I don't know how to, if I had to transfer someone tomorrow, I couldn't do it. But it is true. Everyone told me to trust the process, and it turns out that it's actually
It
true.
works. It does work. But yeah, it made field works in that first year or two out real interesting.
That is so interesting. And it's similarly when people ask about what a public health degree is, I'm like, it's a critical thinking degree. Like you just sort of look, it just trains you how to think about issues and appreciate them and approach them. But there's a part of OT, a huge part that's like super technical. It's like it could, there's a vocational training to it of like, what's the right height and what's the length and what, yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. But
And honestly, like, yeah, like Elizabeth said, I mean, I feel like so much of that I've learned on the job in the field.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I didn't realize that part. I just knew that when I was in a position to help hire or be in conversations about OTs to get them from UNC because they get the full package. But so speaking of that full package, let's talk about what you do when somebody comes in. Marie, we'll start with you. When somebody comes in, because you're in a community, well, you're both in community settings, but you're in slightly different types of community settings. So you're, talk to us. So if someone comes to the Orange County Department on Aging and says something that triggers your involvement, what do they say and what do you do? How's that?
Well, there is a lot of things they could say that would get me involved, and that's one of the both joys and concerns with being the only OT at the Department on Aging that serves the entire county. So folks can come to me for a plethora of things, but I feel like the biggest things are, I want to age in place. How do I make my home ready for me? I've had a fall. I don't want to have another one, or I'm worried about a fall. I don't want to have one. My loved one is living with dementia, and we're trying to figure out how to just do life in general with these changing needs and changing situations. X activity has become a little bit more challenging, and I want to troubleshoot and problem solve through that. And that one, if it's something we can talk through in one, maybe two visits, absolutely. If it's going to be something that's a little more, I normally refer out to like home health or outpatient, something like that. What else do people come to me for? Oh, car fit's a whole nother problem that we'll
I
cut.
would
Whole nother situation we'll talk about a little while. So maybe their vehicle is not fitting them the way it used to, and maybe they can't get their seatbelt on by themselves, or their blind spots are way, way too big. So they might come to me for that. So yeah, and really any kind of situation where somebody's having a harder time just being and doing at home, they end up coming across my caseload.
Yes, and knowing you, I'm gonna feed more information because I know what you do and I know when I send people to you. You said when people come to me or when they come to you, but I know you go out to folks and do home visits. So I think because
Absolutely.
I think it's important for our listeners to know in case any of them are interested in this service. So it's not just someone comes to the one of the senior centers and you meet with them there, but talk about that process.
Yeah. And honestly, I prefer meeting with people in their home because I can see them in their space. I can understand them like what is again meaningful and important to them. I can see the photos they've put on the wall. I can see where the carpet a little bit more worn, what their normal walking paths are, what their routines look like within their space. Like if they have the Meals on Wheels calendar on the fridge or something like that, it just like helps to give me more information beyond what they are just telling me or writing to me. So yeah, when I go to meet with somebody in the home, I put about 2 hours aside on my calendar for each of those visits. And it also, somebody might be 5 minutes from the office. It might take me 45 minutes to get to their house, depending on where they live.
Warren County, we're a big county. And how do they, while we're on this topic, how do they find out about it? Is there a cost? Like what? Again, I know these answers, but I'm throwing you softballs. Like, how does that happen?
Yeah. So they might hear about me, through the Department on Aging website. They might hear about me from another professional, such as you kind folks. They might hear about me from a neighbor, a friend, a faith community. There's a lot of word of mouth these days, actually. And so, it could just be like, somebody said, "Oh, you should call and get this." She came to my house and it was helpful. I get a lot of that, just community connections spreading the word.
EMTs, I know, will make a referral also.
Absolutely.
I have called the ambulance 911 when my mother fell, and I was so proud of them. They did a fall assessment, and I was like, I know they are doing an assessment to see if we should do. And I'm like, we've got it there already.
Yeah, I've got a phone call planned with one of the community paramedics this afternoon, actually, just touching base about a couple of mutual clients.
Yes.
So, yeah, staying in connection, staying in communication, about how we can support the community.
And there is, I will just say, there's no charge for this, right?
Absolutely. Nope.
Your
This is.
taxpayer dollars at work, listeners. So there's only one of Marie. So, right, it may take some time. Is there a bit of a wait list if someone calls you or?
At this exact moment, I could see somebody like next week or the week after, but that can change on a dime. So I could have five voicemails when we get off of here, and then we're backed up a little bit again. So.
And just, I like to funny say carbo loading with things that are related. Let's just do it at this time. What's the telephone number that you like for people to use? Because I did the main number, which listeners, you can absolutely use the main number, but we did shout out last show and this show the aging helpline number. And is that generally the best number to call?
That would be the honestly, you can call any number and it'll get to me eventually. But the aging helpline number is 919-968-2087. So yeah, 919-968-2087. One of the few phone numbers in my world that I have memorized.
Okay, Good. It was funny last week. Everyone's like, wait, what is that number again? Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. That's super, super helpful. And the other thing you didn't say, oh, this is, let me tell you about you. So I came to the senior center. I brought my friend there on Friday and we missed you, but we were right outside your office and your hallway outside your office is a little cluttered. How's that for? I'm making, she just took a drink. I'm making her laugh. Why is your office area so cluttering? And I'm not guilting her into cleaning it up. It's because there's
Oh,
one.
it's better than it was last week. It really is.
But I think while we're doing a shout out to things, talk about your thoughtful mess outside your office.
So I also
Go ahead.
organize the county's equipment donation and loan program. So very generous community members donate wheelchairs, walkers, shower chairs, you name it, different kinds of durable medical equipment, canes
Like
and
a bit of a
commode
garage sale
seats.
or something. Yeah, but like all these cool, like the part of a pharmacy store that has your it's what's called, isn't that called durable medical equipment?
Durable medical equipment, or you might hear me call it DME. And yeah, it doesn't stack or store very well. And then I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday of last week, I got such a big donation. Again, I'm so glad, so grateful for donations. It just, since they don't stack or store very well, it tends to make the hallway look a little special for a while.
That's where I know where your office is. So we were walking, and I'm sorry.
Just
I,
follow the pile of equipment.
that's what I did. And I was like, and I was telling my best friend, I'm like, this is Marie's office. And look, they do this whole loan or giveaway program. And look at all this equipment. So, really, listeners, there's so much. And I tell people all the time, especially if you're in Orange County or you're a caregiver in Orange County, that this is there. It's here for you. It's free. You've paid for it through your taxpayer dollars. Like, don't hold back using this expertise.
Please, please, please. I have so much equipment. I want to give it away. I want to find it good homes. There's no due date on any loans. And especially if you've got a surgery coming up, a planned surgery, please come to me. The two most recommended items, and Elizabeth can back me up on this and making sure it hasn't changed in the decade I've been out of the hospital. But two-wheeled rolling walkers and bedside commodes. I have more than enough. I would be glad to give it to you. Don't try and bill your insurance for them. I've got them.
Yes. No, and I have donated some stuff. I might donate more. I'm still holding on to, I've got another parent with me, so I've been careful about what I donate out and what I may use because you never know. And I'm glad I kept my mom's transport wheelchair is amazing. I've used it with clients and it's kind of one of those good things to have around.
Absolutely. They fold up
I
so
don't care.
small, it works.
I know. So Elizabeth, you are in a different community setting. Talk about how you work. Tell us about the community where you work and how people work with you there.
Sure. So I work at Carolwoods Retirement Community in Chapel Hill. I should have looked up my updated numbers before I jumped on the show. I think we're around 600 residents, and that includes folks in independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing. And we also have an early acceptance program. So people who want access to Carolwood services but aren't necessarily ready to move to campus yet, we have over 100 folks who live in the community who are members of our community. So I'm one of two OTs here, and I'm really fortunate because, unlike a lot of other retirement communities, where they have therapists on staff, they have OTs on staff, but they're contractors with, therapy contracting agencies. I'm a Carolwood staff member, and that makes a huge difference in how I'm able to serve the members of this community. I really get to work on two different levels. I get to work individually with residents, across the whole spectrum of care. So I work with people who are early acceptance, I work with people in skilled nursing, and everywhere in between. And the wonderful thing about my job is I get to build relationships with people over time. I get to know people really well. I've been here for 10 years, and there are people that I have worked with on and off for 10 years. I've worked with their spouse. I knew their spouse. They have different events that come into their life when they had that stroke or when they had that surgery. I've come in, we're a part of each other's lives. So they know me, I know them. And that's a really special thing, as an OT, and I think as a client. So I work with people After they have a major event like a stroke, or if they've had a fall and fractured something, if they had a surgery, if they just got sick and are having a hard time bouncing back, I work with those people to help them, get back to the things that they want to do and to get back home wherever that is, on campus. I also do a lot to support people through transitions. A retirement community like this, there are so many transitions. It's a transition to come to campus. And then once you're here, the transitions don't stop. People have to transition between levels of care. So I walk alongside people for that entire journey, helping them stay where they want to stay and to also help them evaluate when that's not working anymore and when it may be time to make a transition to a higher level of support. So I'm very involved in that. I do a lot of the same home evaluations and home modifications that Marie does, but I do it here on campus. I work with people who have chronic health conditions that get harder to manage. I've got a lot of folks with diabetes who use sliding scale insulin, and that's so hard to integrate into your daily routine. So I work really closely with people on issues related to that. I have a special interest in low vision because, Carol Woods, we have a lot of readers on campus. We have a lot of authors on campus. It's a smart bunch of folks here, and everyone loves to read. Reading is an incredibly important occupation here. And I was here for a very short period of time before I realized that this was something that I needed to learn more about so I could help people continue reading, if they develop eye conditions. So I've got a specialty interest in that. And I have my heart really is in cognitive care. I worked with TIPA. I got certified as a coach in the positive approach to care many, many years ago, and have been very involved in cognitive care efforts on campus ever since. Carol Woods is a dementia inclusive community. We don't have a locked memory unit. So people with cognitive change live all over campus. And, we do that because we think it's the right thing to do. There are challenges with that too. Not everybody does inclusion because inclusion is hard. And so I've been really involved in that. I support people at every point on the cognitive spectrum. I work with them to make sure they can keep doing the things they want to do, that they're living in the most supportive environment that's available to them. And I also do a lot of education. So that's kind of the individual work that I do. But I also get to work on the level of the community. So I collaborate really closely, like with our facilities team, with our maintenance team. I was part of Universal Design Task Force, where we looked at how should we be renovating units on campus to help people age in place. What are the things that should just be a standard feature of every unit going forward? When maintenance is renovating or doing something, they will come to me. They'll come to OT and seek feedback to make sure that they're taking accessibility, that they're making it accessible to as many people as possible.
Love that.
And I work, in my interest with dementia, I've worked a lot on the at the community level, doing a lot of staff education. I've been heavily involved in our staff education efforts. What information, what skills do we need to transmit to our staff members here to make sure that everyone from folks in dining to grounds to security to the nurses providing that direct care, that everybody has a comfort level in supporting and interacting people with dementia and with cognitive change. So I'm still very involved. Actually, Carol Woods has freed me up from my clinical responsibilities, one day a week now to focus exclusively on that important cognitive care work. So that's a part of my job too.
Oh, that is
That is so
amazing.
fun.
I know. Bravo to you. Bravo, of course, to my wonderful colleagues at Carol Woods for taking this broader approach. And I am wondering if you talk to your colleagues or students and say, this is how OT is truly valued and utilized and incorporated, as opposed to this very narrow, sometimes OT are, I mean, I think hospital-based OTs, it is going to be very ADL, activities of daily
I mean,
living.
it. I mean, OT has
That's
to
the
change
bread
depending
and
on the setting it's
butter
in.
of it. But the level of involvement that both of you have, both in terms of that direct as well as that bigger picture of how our environments can be more supportive, I'm loving that. What
And
is
I know social workers split themselves into like client care and macro social work. And I think about some of that like community level stuff that we both do, Elizabeth, is like macro OT, actually,
Exactly. And I
which
love
edges towards that
working.
public health side of things.
Exactly. I love working both of those levels. You know, each informs the other. And yeah, I think it's really taking full advantage of our full skill set. I think if I worked in a community where I was a contractor, you know, those are for-profit companies. They're focused on just maximizing
Oh, it's like the billable
reimbursement
hours.
dollars.
You have 45 minutes or 15 minutes, and you're seeing it's a very clinical model. It's very different than,
Exactly.
well, and the fact that you, as you said, you've been able to, you know, walk along folks for 10 years. And so knowing, as you said, those who want to read or be able to go forth in those pursuits, those who are painters, those who are, you know, potterers, those who want to be able to go and be volunteers out in the community, I think is amazing. I'm thinking of that, it's like that triangle. What is it, the triangle, the dynamic sort of interplay between like the person environment fit? Is it that an OT thing, or it's an OT thing that how does, right, how your environment, because a lot of folks, and we had Esther Greenhouse on the show, who's an environmental gerontologist. There's some overlap but differences about, and I think so many people are really addressing this now with that focus on aging in place or wherever, just focusing on maximizing ability. How does the environment either help or hinder them? You
And
know?
it's not just, so what you're talking about is what in OT we think of as the PEO model, the person, environment, occupation,
Oh, that.
theoretical model. And yes, but I think it's important to note that when we say environment, we're not just talking about the physical environment. Like that's a big part of my dementia work, is part of it is the physical environment, but there's the social environment too. There's the cultural environment that impacts a person's ability to participate.
Oh,
Because
that's
even if it's all physically accessible, everything is universal design. If a person doesn't feel welcome and feel safe and feel included, it's all moot.
that is so interesting, because I have to say, I did have, I mean, I get it. I mean, clearly I get that, but I was thinking on a more physical. Well, speaking of the physical, we have a few minutes left, and I know one of the ways I personally have worked with OTs with my family, and I had a client reach out to me just last week asking about why her doctor suggested she meet with an occupational therapist to evaluate her driving. And so I think that is one of those abilities, or one of those, and you mentioned it really quickly, Marie, that people don't realize. Occupational therapists play in either how you're comfortable in your car and whether actually it's still safe to drive. So whoever wants to take that on.
Well, I will caveat, I'm not a driving specialist. I don't think you've gotten that one, have you, Elizabeth?
No, I'm not. But this is fresh on my mind because I just gave a presentation. Our independent living residents invited me to do a presentation on safe driving. And so this is very much a topic that's fresh in my brain right now. There are so many different Or as we change, this is not news to anyone listening to this program. As we get older, we change. Our bodies change, our brains change, and there are a lot of these changes, you know, that are perfectly normal, but that do have an impact on how we drive. And so I would encourage anybody, like everybody who's human, to think about this, to keep it in mind, and to normalize having conversations about driving safety, about changes you're experiencing, and to not hesitate to get evaluated, to talk to people about it, and to also think about when it might make sense to retire from driving, to make a plan. I mean, all of us make You know, most of us make plans for retirement. Most of us have, you know, advanced care plans. You know, we have wills and other things. And this is just a part of planning all of us should do as we age. And there are so many different conditions that older adults have that can impact your ability to drive safely. You know, anything that restricts your range of motion of your neck, arms, or legs is going to have an impact on your driving. As we get older, our bodies change and we don't fit our cars in quite the same way that we used to. And it may become harder to drive safely. OTs, you know, especially driving rehabilitation specialists, can maximize that fit to make sure that your body matches the vehicle you're in, that you and can also recommend modifications to your vehicle, modifications to how you're driving to keep you safe on the road. I think most people are afraid to take advantage of that, part of our skill set because there's a fear,
If I
driving is
ask for help, just like you don't want to tell someone you fall because then they'll make you move. If you ask for help with
exactly.
driving, then you're going to take the license away.
Exactly. There's this idea that you're going to take it away from me if I admit that something's difficult. Where no, like our job is to figure out how to keep you safe, modifying things to make it safe, and to also help you evaluate at what point does it make sense to maybe pursue other transportation options and to explore. I encourage everybody to explore those options well before the day you actually need to use them, because that makes the
Absolutely.
transition. Some of us may have to make the transition away from driving, some of us may not. But if that day comes, then if you are comfortable with those alternatives, then it makes everything easier. But yeah, I'll let Marie, I think Marie does more with CarFit, which is a great program.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's a great resource out of ECU actually. So shout out to another OT school. It's called Plan for the Road Ahead, put together by another phenomenal OT, Ann Dickerson. I feel like she is, pun intended, paved the way.
I know. And I love the plan for the road ahead. There's puns all over the place. I love
Yeah.
that.
And it's, and thinking about driving skills is not even just the physical ability to drive. It's, I feel, I don't quote me on this, but there's like three tiers of driving skills, like being able to like understand the signage, recognize where, honestly, where other cars are on the road. What does all the traffic on Interstate 40 do to you these days as you're trying to navigate and change lanes and watch where everybody else is going? Can you get where you need to go without your GPS if the internet signal goes out?
Okay,
There's a
yeah.
physical side, there's the cognitive side, and there's this just like
And reaction
spatial understanding navigation. Yes, just because we can turn the steering wheel and turn on the ignition doesn't mean there aren't challenges in other areas. So yeah,
Yeah,
planning ahead is the biggest thing.
it was an intense. It was a 2-hour process, having watched a family member go through it, and the range of cognitive skills, different kind of eyesight stuff, the reaction time.
Correction times.
Reaction was really biggie. And you just do it on a video game and it's like, do you see the kid throwing a soccer?
Chasing out, yeah.
Yeah. And I know for some folks, they're scared because they think it's, 0 to 100. It's either you drive or you're not allowed to drive. But really, there's a range in that. They may say, there may be let's not drive at night or just drive locally at home, that it's not. I know that's also why people can avoid going.
Yeah, it's not all or nothing. Usually if you get a driving evaluation, they'll say you're good to go, driving no restrictions, or they'll recommend, we recommend that you avoid the highways, or we recommend that you stick to roads that, are 45 miles an hour or less, or we recommend you avoid driving at this time of day. There is a spectrum. And in my experience, most people start self-limiting their driving way before I get involved. People tell me I don't drive at night anymore. I only drive to these two or three familiar places.
I hear that a lot with folks. And now the opportunities, I mean, thank you, Uber, thank you, Lyft, thank you
Thank
others.
goodness.
We
Yeah.
have really limited. I mean, we do have public transportation. We've done a shout out. One of our second shows, I think, had Brandy Beaker on, talking about the different transportation options. But the rise in these ride share opportunities, I mean, I think there's other issues involved, but we have a lot more options than we did about 10 or 15 years ago. I will also give a shout out to the OT that I met with, going back to the tips and tricks. As a caregiver, even though the decision was no longer driving, but there was also how to, like, it goes to the car fit, how to manage in the car. And I was hurting my back trying to help, like, my mother in and out of the car. And she showed me this $9 device. I wish I had it. It was the leg lift.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
It was
it
amazing.
works.
Yeah, you just put it in, you slip it under the foot, and then you
Yep.
help lift someone out, and then the twisty thing on the seat to help someone get out. I mean, it's those kinds of things. That little $9 thing, I ended up ordering multiple to go in each of the vehicles. Not only did it help my mom, but it helped me because I was having backache. Like, a lot of these things are so straightforward, but I had no idea they existed. And that's why you need an expert.
Well, that's why you have an OT who has a filing cabinet this
Yes.
big in their brain of all of these things that we've seen and experienced and noticed. We say,
Yeah.
this worked for this client, it might work for you too.
Exactly. I have a whole library in my brain of things, and I have these deep wells of very particular expertise. Like, I could talk toilets with you. We could have a whole show just dedicated to toilets
Honestly, we could. It'd be
and
kind of
toilet
neat.
modifications. Like,
You
I
know
have so
what?
many opinions.
I hate that we have to end our show in a minute, but you know what? I think that is a great. We always want to leave people like wanting more. And I think we totally, because I brought an OT into a situation that was a cognitive care situation, and it ended up being a toilet height situation. You know, like, you
Ups all the
know,
time.
we are going to have a
All the
show
time.
on. All right. Any last, Marie, if you can do the quick aging helpline number again.
Yes, 919-968-2087. And a quick shout out about CarFit. I am planning a CarFit event in early June at the Passmore Center in Hillsboro. So call that helpline if you want some more information because I cannot remember the date off the top of my head. But if you do want car fit, just I'm glad to just offer one-on-one appointments as well. So just call that helpline if you want to make sure your car is adjusted to your body and your needs. It only takes 20 minutes.
Oh, this was great. Marie Dagger, our fifth time guest from Orange County Department on Aging. Thank you so much. Elizabeth Hart, one of the amazing OTs over at Carol Woods Retirement Community. I can't thank you enough for coming on, and let us all celebrate you for OT Month. Have a wonderful month of April celebrating yourselves and sharing information about what you do. A quick shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for giving us this time for the Aging Well Together show, and our sponsors, Orange County Department on Aging. And listeners, as always, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to the next time together. Take care.